CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons. A special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today from her strange compound in places unknown, 6-foot Gelfling. How's it going?
Hey, how are you, Roberto?
I love saying compound. Compound may be my favorite, like, term for calling somebody's, like, apartment or room or broadcast studio, just, like, the compound. Like, it makes it
my
more
lair.
Official. Well, because lair has this sense of like, there's a bit of wonder to a lair, but it's like, welcome to my lair. I am the stereotypical D&D guy that everyone makes fun of. Even us D&D players make fun of the stereotypical D&D guy. No, seriously,
well,
my DM
do all
time.
I've always referred to it as like a grotto, because Gelfling's grotto, it's my grotto. It's my safe place.
Okay, what – this is going to sound weird, but fuck it. What constitutes a grotto? Like what is the if it, cause you always see like, oh, it's this grotto, that grotto. And it's usually like, there's usually water present. There's usually some type of stonework, potentially a koi pond.
Well, sir, I am glad you asked because this is something
planned.
I've actually asked fairly often. So what a grotto is a, colloquially it's considered, it's an indoor structure resembling a cave. Which is basically what Google calls it. Now, what a grotto technically is it's a small, but it's specifically a picturesque cave, but it's generally artificial.
Oh, shoot.
It's something that people have created.
Thank you, Techie Gamer, by the way. I forgot I muted you for the intro portion. So you may want to say, it's okay, recording. So the fun part of doing all, so the fun part of having everything live online and everything built and everything sort of...
backed up.
Well, because this is where I'm getting to the point now when it comes to the way I do things. Because, you know, we're starting to get a lot of, you know, this is the first time I actually had, I just got to tweak myself a bit louder to make everything work out. Because the thing is that this is all going to be to the audio people funny, and to the new people who are watching stream, very interesting. So this is sort of the, you know, we've been destroying the fourth wall anyways. I have at least four different things recording this podcast right now.
Oh, shit.
Metaphor. Maybe four is the two over things. Let's see.
The CIA, the NSA, your rig.
Well, not counting anyone looking at the bits or doing all that kind of stuff. But let's go through the chain. Let's see. We've got Twitch recording something. We've got OBS locally recording something. We've got the software recording audio something. So at least three different things are recording this podcast, this video, this audio as we speak.
What goes on the internet can never die.
Do you ever find that scary that that's the case?
Oh, honey, okay. My MySpace page is still there, and it still has the HTML CSS work that I did on it back in the day. It's still there. The images are still hosted. Yeah, cringe-worthy. Yeah.
What's hard was at that time when MySpace was becoming a thing, because, like, I had been on, let's see, let's try to go back, flashback a bit. What was your first social network?
Okay.
and to paraphrase and make sure we limit it correctly, I don't mean what was your first community, was your first internet kind of thing. We don't have to talk about BBS boards if you're part of one or any of the other weird things if you were. That's totally fine if you were. There's nothing. There is no shame here.
I went from StarTrek.com to Yahoo Groups. But my first, like, social media as what social media is today, I think was MySpace.
Okay.
Yeah. Tom was my first friend online.
So for me, this is how my first real taste of social network was probably would have been Friendster. And at one point,
oh my God.
Yeah. No, I've been around the block. I don't mean to brag, but yeah, I've been on this internet thing since, oh God, I think my earliest experience with what the internet is or what it could be in any capacity would have been Prodigy, but
oh, wow.
Not just
all right.
Any old Prodigy, mind you. You know, Prodigy as a normal thing is okay. This would have been Prodigy back. I'm like adjusting my mic. Back when
you gotta
they
tighten
had
that fucker up.
That's what happens. You get used to it. Back when Prodigy had a specific DOS client, and the DOS client I think only had like a chat room, some weird maze game, and paintball because that's what you did. It was games and like cooking recipes. And we had it for like a day and a half. And then like my dad converted to buying Windows 3.1.
The, oh my God, I remember that. Yep. C:/run, et cetera. Like I bet if you put me in front of a Windows 3.1, I could probably figure it back out again, like how to boot it up during DOS. Like I used to play, okay, so this is going to bring me back. Storybook Weaver?
Yep.
I used to boot that through DOS because Windows 3.1 was too slow.
Yep.
So I'd do the run command, blah, 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 from this floppy drive to, yeah. I still have those floppies.
No,
somewhere.
No, it's fine because, like, I mean, the reason it was so slow is, and this is weird. So Windows as we know it now, people, this is for the younger audience, because there was a time when Windows 10 wasn't the latest and greatest, and that you weren't saying, why are we using 10? We should go back to 7, because 7 was when it was the best. You know, come back to me when we talk about 2000. We'll, you know, we'll go from there.
Ooh.
2000 Windows was pretty good. 2000 actually was the first incarnation of what we see now.
Yeah, but Windows ME was in there somewhere.
Well, ME was a... Now we're getting there. Millennium Edition was the idea of how can we make Windows NT, the NT kernel, the thing that made Windows 2000 amazing and awesome and great. How can we make that but not use that and really piss off tech support people who had to deal with people using ME because they couldn't tell graphically whether or not they're using 2000 because it looked exactly like fucking Windows 2000 and had every driver issue on the planet and was just basically another rehash of the Win32 kernel that was already garbage.
See, at that point, I was one of my friends at the time had Windows ME on their family computer. And this is like, it was one of my, not my first tech support jobs, but trying to explain to somebody on the landline how to fix Windows ME when I couldn't see what was going on, when I didn't have it myself, so I couldn't like follow along. And I'm talking to her on the fucking landline for 4 hours, and my mom gets the bill, and she's like, I'm sorry, what the fuck is this? And I'm over here going, my bad.
I've never had that. I've thankfully never had to do that kind of extensive tech support because a lot of my friends, we had one friend, my friend Chase, you know, thankfully he's the one that did this and he, you know, braved the world. But he was the only of one of our friends to have purchased people are asking how do they phone in the program. Sorry, there is no phone in. In this is not as interactive. But hit the chat room and I will respond back to you. Just do an at symbol to me and I'll make sure to see it. I'm watching the chat room. Sorry about that, people. Sorry about that to the recorded audience. But going back to the thing, he bought Millennium Edition. He bought it, upgraded, did that, and ultimately. When it all was said and done, you know, we learned it was just a piece of garbage, as everyone kind of learned.
Mm-hmm.
When he went back to Windows 2000, we still had a disk left over. We had this Millennium Edition disk. And I don't remember if we didn't record it. I didn't see it, but he always told me he did this. And you know what? I'm going to believe him because it's the only usefulness for that disc. And if you still have a Millennium Edition disc and you're not holding it for some collection and you want something to do it, here's the perfect idea. So you can put that there with all your AOL discs and your,
your Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing floppies and stuff. God, yeah,
man,
I still have it.
I'm amazed that you have it. I've never owned a Mavis Beacon. I think the oldest piece of tech I own in this apartment, I had acquired it from a friend of mine. And ultimately, to make a long story short, I have a copy of one of the Sun Microsystem operating systems. I don't know which version.
Holy shit. All
yeah.
right.
Yeah. I've got a Sun OS over there because fuck it. We all have Sun OS.
I have a USB powered floppy disk because a lot of my original writing and artwork and stuff like that is all saved on floppies. So I have a USB 2.0 speed floppy drive. I mean, it's newer tech, but it allows me to, you know what else I have? I have a fucking zip drive. Do you remember that shit?
Of course. I wanted a zip drive. I wanted a zip drive, a jazz drive. There was an orb drive at one point that was optical that could hold, I think at the time, maybe a gig tops. Are you kidding me?
If you were willing to drop some serious money, you could get the gig one. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to. There are certain things tech wise that I lusted after. I think it was a jazz drive specifically on a SCSI interface. SCSI for those that with all the terminal blocks and weird bullshit like that. This is going back in time in terms of tech, and it's one of those weird things that if you think back, because like I remember like at one point I was looking at the computer saying like, yeah, that $3,000 computer would be great. I could have, you know, 100 megahertz machine and do all this kind of weird bullshit stuff. But going back to Millennium Edition, so what he said he did, I don't know if it's true, but I'm going to say believe him in all honesty. Basically, he said he used it for skeet shooting.
That's dangerous because those shards get fucking everywhere.
There are certain products in the history of products that deserve to be shot flying to the sky. And Millennium Edition is one of those products that deserves to be shot while flying through the sky. Because it was a garbage OS. It was so garbage. And it was this weird point in time when, you know, you talk to gamers at the time and PC gaming, everyone's like, what operating system do I go with? Windows 2000. Cool. How do I get it? Well, you can pay this much money or you can pirate it like most likely people did. And you just had Windows 2000 because that was an NT. It was stable. It could do everything. And it could game. A lot of games were already being made to work on NT at the time. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, to kind of break it down, when Millennium Edition came out and just became this sort of, let's make it look like Windows 2000 because that's what they want. They want the look and feel. It's like, no, we want that stability, that kernel that was there, all the stuff that made it happy and friendly. And it's one of those things that annoyed the crap out of me. And it was God damn, you're bringing up bad memories now.
Sorry.
How did we get on to talking about Millennium Edition?
Sorry. So something that just was a question about my
Yeah, we should probably talk about this because this is something that's been, interested to me. People are talking in the chat room about your background, talking about whether it's – I say people as a generality just because it makes it sound more official. People are talking about your background, saying it looks like a massage parlor. Is it a haircut
Asian
one?
Haircut place. Well, clearly it's not a haircut place because I've got split ends all the way up to my ears. Just saying that.
That would be awesome. It's like actually where your broadcast, like this is like your Better Call Saul moment where it's like, you know, you have the stream is right next door to the nail salon and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
What was the drink, the lemon water, I think it was like lime water. Or
cucumber water.
Cucumber water. There you go.
So the big story behind this is when I first started streaming on Twitch back in 2014, I was set up in the middle of a living room. So I didn't have my back to a wall. Now, the only way to make a visual break and to allow for not like a terribly busy, distracting background, because I also didn't have a green screen. I tried doing a green screen, but I didn't have the lighting available to actually, you know, clear it up and make sure it looked good without a bunch of shitty artifacting and things like that. So what I did is I bought this off Amazon, used that to cut my area of the room off and give myself a pleasing background. Well, it became kind of part of my stream after that because cherry wood, that dark red wood, I actually use that as a visual accent in my stream. So I picked up, I carried that along, and it just, it's continued. So I haven't gotten rid of it. I've thought about going to a green screen. If I did, I would actually like overlay it over this framework so I didn't have to actually tack it into the wall. Because now I'm in my own room. I have my own office. I'm off separate from the, I have doors I can close. I can control my sound, my acoustics. Yes. But,
that's why I have a dynamic mic in front of me.
Exactly. Right. Well, I didn't have that for so long. I started with a Yeti, but,
Yeti's not a bad mic.
It isn't, but it's shit when cats knock it off the desk and it goes dunk, dunk, dunk across the floor. But anyway, so yeah, I've carried this on, from a long, yeah, I've carried this on for a long time, and it's just part of the stream. If I don't have it, people are like, what the fuck? You know, like, what, huh? Because it's this kind of cherry wood shoji, and then around the outline of my my camera is a thin cherry wood frame. So it sets that off from the stuff that's going on the screen, but it's a nice complete package because it all matches.
Well, I think it's a good thing, because I like a lot of streamers I know use green screen as sort of a default, because the idea that you can, you know, chroma key your background out, you can then be part of this thing, you don't have this sort of weird blocky thing in the middle, and I get that, and that's totally cool. Do what you got to do if that is the style you're going for. But I always appreciate when people sort of figure out what their background is for things. Like, this was, you know, my idea was kind of putting a whole bunch of posters to represent me in some capacity. Obviously, mm-hmm. a whole bunch of weird music posters and video game related things. And so I appreciate when people think of all the different sort of ways of presenting that background and sort of determine that. Because again, it's, everyone uses a green screen. Everyone has mm-hmm. this sort of very much this sort of stale thing. They all have, no offense to your chair, but they all have the DX Racer, all these kind of weird things. They all have a very, you know, you look at someone like Ray Narvaez Jr., you look at all these, they all have this. But I always feel appreciative when someone goes and says, okay, well, I don't want to do the green screen because everyone else does it. I kind of want to mm-hmm. do something more me, whatever that is. And because that was the first thing I noticed, like, oh, wow, it's an awesome background. One, it makes easy for framing and doing something.
That's the big thing, too. Just like, oh, click that in.
Well, because you already know, like, because you can visually, because obviously, like, in my shot, I can see kind of where things are. I have, you know, tape around sort of mimic me. I have sort of other markers, things like that. But, like, having that visual thing, because you can easily frame yourself in the shot. Like, you already know, mm-hmm. okay, I see me in the camera. Let me move over here. Cool. I'm between these two pillars. Like, that's the mission. That's sort of the idea. And, you know, it's very cool to have all that stuff taken care of visually, because not only it helps you as the broadcaster or streamer or whatever get that quickly done so you don't have to really think about it, but it does look great. It does look kind of as an accent, you know, like the whole mm-hmm. even if it wasn't like cherry wood, but even having the wood sort of like goes, well, it's brown, let me try to mimic the brown here and do that kind mm-hmm. of stuff, and it adds a certain, as weird as it sounds, it adds a certain mystique, you know. I'm zooming in the shot because it just it looks great.
Now, to kind of, we were talking about before we went live, we were talking about the DX Racer, and we were going to touch on that again.
Yep.
And I would like to kind of explain that as well, because I do have a reason for it. So, the chair that I had before, I'd had for 3 years. It was a low back $60, just a normal office chair. And the seat had worn out for so much because I do work on the computer. I do play on the computer. I do my hobbies on the computer. Pretty much everything happens around this desk. So I was sitting in this chair, notwithstanding, you know, my walks, my exercise, stuff like that. But I was sitting in this chair for sometimes upwards of 15, 16 hours a day. And a pillow is not made to comfort your ass.
No.
I'm just going to throw that out there. So what I did is I had a price point, and I did my research. And honestly, I did find that out of the recommended chairs, the one that was going to have the best longevity to it was the DX Racer for the price. Like, I could go up, you know, $1,000 and get a chair that's going to last the rest of my life, but I don't need that, you know? And I got a black one. I didn't get any of the accent colors because I changed. I mean, like, okay, so I wear this hoodie pretty much every single stream because it's blue. The chair is black. You can see the differentiation.
For sure.
You know? But if you've got random colors, again, that's more shit in the background that's going to get more distracting.
More distraction. Yep.
Exactly. And I want to cut as much of that out.
Yes, I have a giant distracting background, but because it's sort of a jumbled of stuff, it kind of fades away and there's enough separation between me and that the lights can go and fill and do all the stuff that they do. Now we're getting into tech talk with broadcasting people. Now you get to learn the method of the madness, how to become a pro streamer. Yeah, that's exactly what we are.
Super pro.
But you know, you're absolutely right about the whole idea of sitting down in a chair and kind of getting used to that. Like for me, that's why I made sure I went to get a mechanical keyboard, because like I've got a stand-up desk now, so I don't really think about sitting down so much and sort of standing for hours. But because I was like, I want to make sure my, you know, this is the thing I use the most. This is the thing I type the most with. Yeah, I have a decent mouse, but if I'm doing coding, if I'm doing writing, if I'm doing texting, or even just simply browsing the web, the keyboard is like my major, major way of interfacing with stuff. And so for me, that's why I made sure that like this was the most expensive. I think beyond the computer itself, this is probably the most expensive thing on – well, I take it back. I don't know if this is the most expensive thing now because
I was going to say you're a podcaster, dude. You better have something more expensive than that keyboard.
Well, because I mean theoretically – because the thing is that like – let's see. This is I'm doing the math. I mean collectively everything is pricey, but that doesn't mean that because again, the keyboard's important, you know, and no one – everyone sort of cheaps out on these things because like we look up – if you think of like the keyboard that gets shipped with your computer is just like basically, let's say, what is it? It's like a Mylar on there.
The membrane, yeah, like,
it's
yeah.
Garbage. It's and I get it. You know, mechanical keyboards are pricey and I'm never going to say that they're not. And if you know, if it's not the thing that you use a lot, don't spend money on it. But I just realized like, man, I am typing so much in this thing. Let me just, you know, get a DOS keyboard and go for there. Everything else. People are talking about chairs now and Herman Miller stuff and things
now,
like that.
To be fair, what I just typed in chat, I did look at Herman Miller's, but I couldn't afford it at the time.
Well, because that's sort of what happens is that you look at what you can afford. You look at what, like for me, you know, when it came to microphones, I was upgrading this sort of thing. People are mad at me using people, by the way. I just do that just out of, you know, we're already doing a behind the scenes episode. So let's keep going with this behind the scenes episode.
Sounds good to me.
it's weird. When it comes to being a radio broadcaster, typically video is sort of the new thing about it. Video is sort of new for me. I'm definitely more of an audio person. I have for the longest time, I'd only concentrate on this sort of thing. Never even cared about the background, never cared about lights, any of the stuff that you see right now. None of this was even part of the equation because for the longest time, I wasn't allowed on here. Being a talk show.
Oh, because the talk show.
The talk show.
Yeah.
We were forbidden from Twitch. We were banned. We were banished when they said, now hear this. We are no longer Justin TV. We are Twitch. And we have banished you all who are no longer part of our gaming overlord, even though I freaking play video games too. But that doesn't...
Just have a little inlay of like Tetris in the
bottom
right hand.
That was the joke that like Brian and Jury said, like if they had a game in the background, they were playing it. And I almost want to believe that somebody at Twitch would say, all right, you're fucking around. Get the hell out of here. Like, I almost want to believe that would happen. Just knowing Twitch in its infancy, they would have said, nah, that ain't going to fly. You're not, you can't play Tetris. You can't just have Tetris in the background while you occasionally hit the keys. Like, oh crap, I didn't make the Tetris after all.
Oops,
gotta try again. Let me go back to level zero.
Now that said, I want to kind of grab onto that and run with it a little bit. Now, Justin TV, and I've heard it described as like the Wild West of streaming, and it really was pretty lawless, and it was pretty constrictive, or it wasn't constrictive at all. There were no rules. It was like anarchy.
For sure.
Now that said, now that Twitch, okay, so Twitch started, yes, gaming only. Then they added creative. Mm-hmm. Then they added talk shows. That was backwards. They did talk shows, then they did creative. Then they did music, and then they did, you know, they've built onto this. So they're starting with a set rule set. They're starting with a rule set, and now they're adding everything else onto it. And it's structured. It's in there's a semblance of control, and there's not a whole lot of chaos. There's order to it. Eventually, I believe, you know, write this down. Gelfling says this. Eventually, they will open up, especially with the IRL edition. They will open up to allow pretty much every kind of, as long as it's not against TOS, they'll add on every single kind of streaming you could possibly do, but they're going to do it over time when they have control over it and it's not complete anarchy.
If it's not apparent, Amazon in some capacity is always competing with Google. And this is something that, you know, if because I always say to people, when I say Amazon to you, what do you think of? And people will say either, oh, store, buy things. And some people say, when I say Amazon to you, what do you think of? Oh, I think of Twitch and stuff like that. I say, when I say Amazon, what do you think of? Oh, AWS and hosting stuff.
CDNS and stuff like that.
It's like CDNs, S3, you know, EC2, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever part of the Amazon Web Service stack you exist on, if not on all of them. And so knowing all that stuff, I know, I go, yeah, they're totally want to compete with Google, and Google has YouTube, and that kind of let everything go. So yeah, it makes sense. And that's one thing I do appreciate, that they've done their best to figure out, okay, well, we figure out this gaming thing. We've got all this kind of community stuff kind of set, pat. We've got the idea of, here's how that segment works. Let's take that same thought process and apply it to other communities, whether it be mm-hmm. creatives, whether it be talk shows, whether it be IRL, and figure out how it is we can apply that same methodology to these other, you know, segments of the market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to get to that, but going back to why I say people as opposed to individual names, it's a radio thing. You get used to just saying people in the chat room, people this, people that, someone said this, someone said that. Not because I don't want to address you personally, and even, you know, some ways it's privacy sort of thing, but because this is going to go up as a podcast, this is going to go up as a recorded thing, and, you know, sometimes people in the chat room, like people who are listening audio, like, oh, well, you know, they won't even care about who said what or what said what, and this is all things that have just been built into my radio streaming whatever, and I'd never been able to work them out. They've never disappeared.
And gender identity is such a hot topic right now. In social media, in the general media, things like that. So gender identity, and it's as a streamer myself, if somebody new comes into chat and I say, hey, how's it going, blah blah blah, how are you doing, dude? And they're like, oh, actually, I'm female. Like, okay, cool. I'm not going to be able to remember that 9 times out of 10, but if I will try. But here's the thing is, when I first started on Twitch, in chat, I was not a streamer. I didn't gender identify. I would prefer, you know what, you can call me dude, you can call me chick, you can call me, well, don't call me chick. But you can call me whatever identifier you want, because it really doesn't matter to me. And I carried that on to when I became a streamer, thinking, okay, A, somebody's not going to care. If they care, they'll tell me. And as long as I say, you know, hey, I might not remember, I'm sorry, but I will try to keep that in the back of my mind. That's a lot of fucking information, especially when you've got almost 1,000 followers. Now, it's not a huge amount, you know, it's not a huge number. I'm not co-carnage or anything like that.
No.
But it's still a task to remember how everybody identifies. And so it's generally, I use the term guys. Ladies and gentle minds is kind of like the term I throw out whenever I start my stream. But I'm not trying to like force anything on it. But if I get too vague, then people are like, oh, well, this isn't tailored to me. I don't feel engaged. So I have to find a balance. And I will ask people, you know, how do you identify? Somebody says, I identify as an Apache attack helicopter. I'm like, okay, Heli. You know,
has that ever actually happened where someone said Apache helicopter?
Apache, I think it was a joke,
maybe it wasn't a joke. Maybe that is truthfully how that person. And again, all this, everything I say stems from, like, you're making a comment about everything you do in the computer, and we're talking about, you know, our sort of tech beginnings and stuff like that. My broadcast beginnings in terms of audio began when I was in high school and was streaming on Live 365. Oh, wow. Like, this is how, like, I've been doing some form of audio broadcasting, talking into some form of a microphone since I was in high school. Just because that was my hobby and that was my thing. Mm-hmm. And it's built over the years of hearing different radio personalities, different podcasting personalities, getting those sort of things built into your mind to where I wouldn't even think of saying things. Like, I don't have the ability to go and say, yes, let me instruct someone in the chat room individually. Not because that, but because even having the chat room is a weird concept to me, because I'm so used to doing just this pre-recorded and sort of having this conversation with somebody. And so a lot of my holdups and things that I do have nothing to do with me trying to be impersonal, me not trying to engage the audience, because a lot of times I go, there are two audiences I have to worry about. I have to worry about A, the audience right now watching live, which is amazing and awesome and cool, and I love you guys as well. But I also have to worry about the audience that may watch on YouTube, the audience that may watch, that may download the audio podcast on iTunes, and sort of work in all of that. And the audience that may just come by saying, well, I know who the 6-inch Gelfling is. Let me listen to this audio podcast that I missed because whatever, you know, or may find, you know, may go through YouTube, may figure out a search. And so it's a matter of going and saying, what is the best general term I can say now that's going to cover that that potential wide swath of an audience? And how do I say that in a way that if someone were to come by and be new to this sort of thing and say, well, I hear this only through audio, and this is because it is sort of the trouble when it comes to any podcast, any kind of live thing. Like, you ever see people on your Rooster Teeth podcasts or even your you know, Brian Brushwood stuff, they'll always kind of they'll say names ever so often, but it's like, well, how well does that do, you know, when someone hears it later on in life? You know, does that does it matter that, not saying that, and for those who are curious what I'm talking about, it's Andy McKay because she's in the chat room, and or he or Apache Helicopter, maybe they refer to themselves as a toaster. Maybe they self-identify as a specifically a Keurig coffee machine from the night, you know, or
I'm
maybe
a fan.
Maybe nope. Just maybe, and I can only hope and pray that they self-identify specifically as a 1920s latte machine, because that is what I want. I want someone to self-identify as, like, I prefer myself as a 1920s latte machine.
And you better remember it. And I wasn't throwing out my numbers to be like, oh yeah, I've
got no. It's this just is just context, we're just. But that, you know? That's sort of the point I'm ultimately trying to make is that then this is brings up a more interesting concept and a more interesting idea, I think, not just simply what's happening in the chat room, but just the idea of thinking about audience and sort of thinking about how your content goes out there. Because even like me, there are many a times where I would love to tweet out something, I would love to counter somebody in an argument, or just post something online, and then I'll go, well, hold on a second, is that going to bite me in the ass if I say it? Am I going to join in on some giant thread that I just do not belong on?
Yep.
And I've only started thinking about that. Like, do you think about that at all when it comes to saying certain things on stream? I mean, obviously, you know, most streamers are a little bit stream of consciousness and sort of say what's on their mind. But is there times when you're like, I want to say this, but I've got to self-censor myself because if I say that, I'm just going to enter a hornet's nest I do not want to be a part of right now.
So it kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier about, you know, making references and things like that. And will people get it in the future? My background is in creative writing. I have a Master of Fine Arts in creative writing, which is a Master of Fine Arts is like a step between a master's and a doctorate. So I spent way too much time in school is basically what I'm saying. and one of the things that we dealt with was the idea of, is it okay to make pop culture references in your writing, in your projects, running the risk that 100 years down the road, 50 years down the road, people aren't going to get it. You know, if you write a meme into one of your video games, nobody's going to get it 50 years down the road unless they're like a internet hipster. Now, that said,
it's okay. It's people are talking.
I gotcha. But at the same time, because Twitch is kind of transient a little bit, like, I mean, yeah, it lasts forever. If you're partnered, your archives are there forever. Twitch is still somewhat transient, but the chat remembers, you know? So if I bring up something like, King's Quest, the original King's Quest,
right?
It, in context, it works because I'm a point and click player. They understand that it's like reinforcing my cred or whatever. I haven't played the original King's Quest yet. But at the same time, if I start talking about politics and whatever, it's going to kind of color the experience under the guise of politics. And if somebody knows that about my chat coming in, they're like, oh, they talk about politics, I don't want to, you know. And if it's their first experience in the chat, it can get messy, it can get offensive, it can get polarized. And the thing is my focus is on the game and the chat, interacting with the people, not a safe space, really, because that's kind of a term that's thrown around a little bit too loosely. But my goal is to create an environment where people can have fun, we can talk about almost whatever we want without getting into, I mean, discussions are fine, but getting into polarizing debates is not something that I want to characterize my chat particularly. I know some people don't care. So yes, I do self-censor myself. I don't talk about politics on stream unless I'm throwing off a one-off joke or something like that. But I typically don't get hot-headed about that sort of stuff. I try not to get into deep discussions about something that's pop culture-y in that sense, because if I start talking about incendiary topics like politics, religion, stuff like that, that's going to characterize my chat. And I don't want people to come in thinking like, oh, she's just going to talk about the GOP versus the Democratic Party. You know, that's not what I'm here for.
No,
but
for sure.
Those have a tendency to flavor the experience. So that's why, yes, I ask people to not talk about chat. I ask people to not talk about chat. Sorry, back that up. Rewind.
Don't talk about chat. Chat's for boat. Chat is against the rules.
Yeah,
we are
right.
Here to talk simply about Pokemon and their effect on modern culture today, and how
exactly.
And how Pokemon can help solve the GOP problems. This is CNN Pokemon.
Yeah, right. But that said, exactly, is those are religion, gender politics, and politics in general are three things that they stick. They're sticky topics, not because you get mired in them, but because literally they'll hang on the walls and they'll be there forever.
Well, it's because a lot of times when we talk about those sort of things, there's some, you know, like I have, and this is almost the entire opposite in terms of whatever pushes the conversation forward is what pushes the conversation forward, whether it be politics, whether it be religion, whether it be tech, whether it be pop culture, it doesn't matter. Like there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. If it moves the conversation forward and it gets us to the hour mark, congratulations, that is our podcast for the day. We've accomplished our goal, our quota, whatever you want to say. But with that being said, you're absolutely right that it sticks, but I think it's more of that a lot of times people have sort of in their idea, like you know, that's there's an old movie, and I don't remember what the name of it is, but it was about the Scopes trial. It was like an old, like, black and white film, and I always forget the damn name of the film because it's such a great part, but it's the Scopes trial, for those who are curious, we're talking about in history. That was the trial that literally signified whether or not they could teach evolution in schools, and eventually went to the Supreme Court and got knocked down and all that kind of fun stuff. This is history, so, you know, we're well
was beyond. Was it Inherit the Wind, 1960s?
I think so. But there's a very famous scene at the very end when – thank you. Yeah, Handy McCain said Inherit the Wind. You said Inherit the Wind. We got there.
I'm going to let him take the credit for it because I just Googled it.
No. I always forget it. But there's a scene at the very end, and it's such a great scene where it's the lawyer and it's the other side of the argument, sort of the – I can't remember if it's the school attendant or the priest or someone like that. But it gets to the point where he keeps attacking every argument and breaking it down. And then the person at the other end just screams and just sort of says, like, you know, because in the Bible it kind of gets this, like, really emotional point. And it's one of my favorite scenes in film, because you see the man who is on the other side not simply just lose the argument, and everyone knows he lost the argument, because eventually the case didn't – he won the case, and that's why he went to Supreme Court and did all the things it did. But you see the man just be destroyed, because somebody just destroyed every foundation that he believed in, and he didn't know where to go. And it's one of the my favorite scenes in film cinema history, because it's just this moment of, like, seeing a man just destroyed and to the point where that's it. And there's nothing else. And so I think what happens with religion and politics is there's a lot of people that sort of – that is either A, their base, or B, such a big portion of their base that if you attack it, that you're not attacking them, because people take a lot of these things personally. If you're not attacking the politics, you're not attacking the thing, because that's the conversation. That's how we have discussions. Mm-hmm. That's how we move forward as humanity. But you're attacking them as a person. And it's hard to explain that, no, I'm not trying to attack you. I realize this is part of you and this is what defines you. But me as a person, I'm defined by a billion different things. And, you know, if you attack one of them, that doesn't necessarily mean everything else down. Like, you'd have to do a multi-form attack to destroy me at this point. Like, I'd have to flank
you on the retro gaming side.
Yep.
And then I would have to attack your choice of operating system. You know, yep. I mean, it gets very confusing. And the thing is like, there's no enjoyment in somebody getting I'm going to use this term, and it's probably not – there's no enjoyment coming out of somebody getting butthurt.
Exactly.
There's no enjoyment. That's not entertaining. Well, I'm sure somebody somewhere finds it entertaining, but it's not fun. I don't like attacking people. I don't like people attacking me. So why do it? You know, in my stream, I don't mind, because I'm using my stream because that's where I interact with so many different people, so many different countries, so many – And it's like, okay, why would I want to create a hostile environment? And okay, maybe it is just one person via another person. Nine times out of 10, there's going to be somebody else in that chat that shares the same views, and then they feel like they've been attacked. And why? I mean, there are so many other fucking things in the world to talk about,
yep,
to relate on, to engage with. You don't need these two things. And so far, it's been ridiculously successful. You don't have to talk about these sorts of things. But again, it colors things. It injects a sense of contemporary pop culture, contemporary culture into what you're doing. And at one time, that can make you feel very current, relevant. Like, oh, it's not really as much of a problem on Twitch as it is on YouTube.
Right.
On YouTube, somebody makes a playthrough video. They're playing through Ghost Recon Wildlands or whatever the new, I think it's Wildlands, but I think it's Ghostland, or
I think it's Ghost Recon 2 Wildlands, I think.
Okay.
I think that's the official thing.
If somebody's making a playthrough video of that or showing their gameplay, and then they make a, like a Trump reference or an Obama reference or an abortion reference or something like that, all of a sudden, 5 years down the road, somebody's gonna click into that. And if by some, you know, they're offended or blah, 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 or something that you say on that recorded video that's there for eternity is proven wrong, all of a sudden, you might retract that statement in a later video or in a later stream or whatever.
But it doesn't matter. It's already the damage is done. And
somebody might not see that retraction. They might not see that apology. You know, you can come out and say, like, I'm very sorry about what I said. Oopsies. But it's already out there. It's kind of the same situation. Like, I'm gonna do it right now. I'm gonna bring in a current issue. And it's the same thing with, like, PewDiePie. His commentary, he said it, it's out there, he can apologize for it, he can clean up his act and blah, blah, blah. There are already people that have written him off for that.
Yeah.
He can change his ways and become a completely different person. But somebody somewhere saw that initial interaction and they've already written him off. So yeah, they're a lost cause to him.
That's
a pity. That's
I agree. And that's sort of been, like, one of the weird things that I've always thought about, because I've realized ever since, I think it was when social media started becoming really a thing, you know, when Facebook kind of became part of the you know, constants for stuff, that I'd always be very conscious of where I was and what cameras are around me. Mm-hmm. And very aware of, okay, there's camera there, camera there, camera there, camera there, picture there, you know, phone camera that way, over here, perfect. Okay, now I know where all the cameras are. I know where everyone's filming this. I know what to then be aware of. Because a lot of times, you know, when I go to a party, I'm not a big drinker. I really don't drink at all. So I don't have to really worry about me sort of losing my, you know, my, it's okay. Everyone, it's all good. Drink away if you want to drink away. It's not me saying, like, don't drink, like, drink if you want to. Do whatever it is, you know, do whatever it is you need to do to survive. As Kevin Smith says, you know, as long as you handle your fucking highs, don't let it handle you.
Exactly.
That's all I say. I'm sort of that mindset. So for me, I'm always at least aware of where I am, remember certain things. Like, I have a weird memory in that. And this sort of talking back to you saying that you may forget something, but the chat never forgets because people don't seem to forget, but, you know, mm-hmm, other things can. I have that weird memory where things will flash back in my brain from, you know, a years ago, you know, moments ago, thinking about
the shower thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good chunk of my thoughts. And so because of that, usually at a party, I'm very aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, cool. I can present myself the way I want to present it, because I don't mind looking like an idiot. I don't mind looking like a jackass. I don't mind being silly. That's my nature. That's just me. I don't mind making a joke or doing pop culture reference or talking about something, music, whatever. I have no problem with that. There's no problem. I have no problem talking politics, religion, because I'm very diplomatic in general, that I can fold back. I can hold back certain things. I don't have to engage because I'm not, you know, I only get super hot headed when you start attacking me personally. And that's just what people do. It's just, you know, flight or fight response. But usually I have the ability to go, okay, cool, I can hear the other side, I can throw my two cents in, I can kind of, you know, bounce back, forward, whatever, you know, hold myself in a conversation. But because I've done that for so many years that I've gotten so used to it, that's sort of where all my interactions fold to, because they're sometimes like, man, I would love to say this. Man, I would love to comment on that. Mm-hmm. I just do not want to have to deal with the people that essentially feel that, even if you didn't necessarily ask for them to join the conversation, mm-hmm, they'll just join it saying, well, actually, it is this.
That.
And I'm cool with having someone correct a fact for me. That's totally fine. I will be the first to admit I'm a, you know, completely, you know, ignorant of certain things and that I may not know everything. You know, I'm the first one to admit, oh, I fucked up. Cool. Thank you for letting me know I fucked up. I will make sure in the future not to fuck up again, because that's what we do as humans. We fuck up and we try again. We reiterate. Like you talk about writing. I can imagine how many things you've written said like, this is just fucking garbage and just completely destroyed it. You know, because that's what the creative process is. That's what humans
Well, you don't destroy anything. You put it into a file folder and you pull it out 5 years down the road and you're like, holy shit, this was terrible. And then you reapproach it. But
okay,
yeah,
that's fair. That's a better approach. But the idea is you have no problem saying this just isn't working and you slash it away and move on. And so a lot of times it's those sort of things. I always keep in mind that I'm like, I know I'm around people and I know that there are people around me and I'm well aware. So if I just keep in mind that, you know, we talk about everybody has a different form, walk of life, everything that, if I just understand, you know, where my commonalities are, like, traveling to other countries, you always find kind of weird dorks. I went to Japan recently and I keep talking about that as if like, oh, yeah, but I gone for a chiptunes festival. And I think like the most eye-opening thing for me was just seeing everybody there and knowing, okay, I don't speak the language. I don't, you know, I'm not great in my Japanese. I guess there's some Australians I can talk English with, and I have friends around me, everything else. But everybody in this room, I have every bit of something related to.
Mm-hmm.
I have something in common with. I can bring up, you know, I can say things like, oh, you make chiptunes, cool. Do you use LSDJ or Family Tracker? And it's like, oh, I'm more of an LSDJ guy. Oh, awesome. Oh, cool. That's a Game Boy version. You know, I have something in the back of my pocket that I can bring up, something relatable that I can talk to with somebody. And that's sort of been my mission in life in talking with as many people I can, because the one thing I strive as a human being is talking, is conversing, mm-hmm. is having that some type of social interaction. It's the weird thing about being this bizarrely geeky, you know, quote unquote perceived introvert when I'm the exact opposite. I just want something to relate to somebody with, because at one point in time, I'm going to have to talk with somebody and I'm going to have to need something in the back pocket.
Exactly. And if you can find common ground and if you have shared ground with somebody, even if you by some reason do get into a heated argument where people's feelings are getting hurt, or you can see something escalating towards, you know, being in a situation that you really don't want to engage with, you can always pull out that kind of like, hey, we have a shared we have something that you can use to diffuse the situation.
Yes.
And that's something that I had to learn really early streaming, and I'm still working on it. I'm not perfect with it, but diffusing situations when trolls come into chat or somebody comes in and they're like, you know, being an asshole or whatever, nine times out of 10, it's a better idea to diffuse the situation rather than feed it, or rather than just shut it off. Because open discussion is another big thing. You want people to talk about what they consider important. You want people to engage with things that they find important to their lives. But you also don't want to feed the trolls at the same time. So diffusing, I've found, is better than just purging and banning somebody for being a dick.
Yes.
You want to either ignore them with a diffusing remark, or if it's that disruptive, you have to focus on them and diffuse the situation internally and smooth it out, and then just roll back into what you were doing before.
Well, because a lot of times, you know, when it comes to those sort of things, and yes, trolls at times will always come in and say, I'm coming in here because again, the idea of a troll is this weird concept of, I need to feel some type of self-worth. I need to feel mm-hmm. important. Let me go into this other person's thing, assess that I'm more important than them, person on screen. And if I do that, that's like me screaming at the television saying like, no, you're an idiot. This is stupid. You know, I get that. That's fine. If that's what gets your, you know, here, if that's what makes you happy, fine. There are far other things, you know, maybe crocheting might be more your style. I'm just saying there's so much, you know, everybody has different walks of life. And that's sort of where I'm at too, where I like the idea of open discussion because eventually we hit common ground and we move forward. Like, that's sort of the weird thing I like to do is move forward, is move the conversation forward, move the format forward, do things bigger, better, and more awesomer. You know, all those things. I don't say
that's
those.
That's not a word, by the way.
I know it's not, but I love it nonetheless.
Just check
it. I'm well aware awesomer is not a word. There's other weird things that are part of my lexicon, and you can blame, you know, Homestar Runner for a lot of them over the years. Cause I still say to this day, I think, I still say Haldo, which is one of the Peasant's Quest games. Speaking of weird point-and-click adventure inspirations, I think one of the phrases that they said is Haldo, which is like, hello, in Peasant Questian? Because I don't think that's actually a word either.
Ish, the Peasant Questian, I get... Yeah. Just slap a in any, you know.
It's like Simlish. Simlish isn't a language, even though it is a language, because there's actually an order to it. I always found that the bizarre one, is that Simlish has like order and rhyme and reason to it. But the idea going back is I like the idea of pushing things forward, because eventually we'll hit common ground and eventually we'll figure it out together as humans, because that's what we do. And once we've figured out all that stuff, you know, it will be great and be awesome, and we will not have these problems. There won't be people that really want to troll, and if there are people who do want to troll, we can eventually have them off talking their own discussion and have these sort of weird things, and they'll form this weird troll community. I would like to call that 4chan. I'm kidding.
/B specifically.
I kid. And I mean that, you know, because that's sort of the thing for me, my diffusing thing, and I'm not sure if it's you, for me it's humor. It's self-deprecating humor to myself, and it's insulting me. I always take the Conan O'Brien or the John Stewart approach of like, let me just insult me, because if I insult me, that means I have put myself on a lower scale and then given them the power. And if I give them the power, it's like, oh cool, we can hit a common ground quicker because you understand I'm being silly. Oh, and I can be silly too, and I can be comfortable. That's been my kind of diffusal tactic, is humor.
My diffusion is typically, I don't like self-deprecating humor, even though I will make self-deprecating comments every once in a while, just because, you know, it's a kind of humor. But what I want is everybody to be an equal footing. So what I'll try to do, and I mean, I can't really explain it because it's different from person to person. But if somebody is being self-deprecating, I'm kind of like, no, what are you talking about? No, you're not stupid. You've got all, because I find that in my personal experience with other people, self-deprecating humor has been the precursor to self-worth issues. And I know a lot of people, where deprecating humor is, it's perfectly fine. But I know a lot of people personally in the real world, in my friends group, that I know they've got self-worth issues. I know they have self-image issues. And the last thing I want to see is them... Is them digging back into it and using it as a shield. And it's like, don't do that.
No. And for me, it's very, very targeted self-deprecating humor for me. Like, it'll be silly things like commenting on the joke of like, well, I'm a geek and I can do this because I wear that on my sleeve. I mean, for Lord's sakes, I'm wearing a goddamn fan gamer shirt. You know, and I'll make those sort of humor references because those are easy and quick go-tos. Like, I'll make a pop culture reference. I'll, you know, reference a video game, music, whatever, because those are very easy, you know, much like I talked before, they're in the back pocket and I don't have to really think about them. I don't really have to go and figure out what the situation complies. I can kind of make that humor very quickly, very, very fast. And usually it's things that are context aware. Like, for example, if I'm streaming a video game and it's a platformer, or it's a little bit hard or difficult roguelike game, I have no problem saying I'm terrible at this game because chances are I am. And that's more of me saying, I'm like, God damn it. I'll curse myself out for making, you know, missing a jump, for doing that kind of thing, because that's me insulting myself. And I'm the broadcaster and I can do that. You know, if someone else comes in saying that they're stupid, like, no, you're not stupid. I'm the dumb one. Like, I'm the idiot. Like, I have no problem calling myself an idiot, because the idea being that if you come in at, because as a broadcaster, sort of the streamer, you know, you are, even though the game might be there, even though you're clicking around, even though you're playing the game and you're not in the chat room, you are the focus. You know, you are the thing that everyone sees. You know, everyone's here not to see what game you're playing. They're here to see you, to interact with you, to have that sort of thing, or interact with the chat room, you know, whatever that is, you know, all those sorts of stuff. And if you can quickly put the, you know, if our idea is that because you're a broadcaster, you're already assumed to be at a higher level, not because you're necessarily higher, but because, you know, hey,
you have control of the situation.
Exactly. You know? You yeah. control the game. You control the broadcast. You control what can be said on the air, and you right. can control who can talk and who can't. Like, you already are at an elevated position.
So and you by need to take yourself down exactly. to that equal position.
Right. Exactly. That's why I self-deprecate exactly. myself, because I'm like, all right, well, if I just jokingly insult myself and I make it very aware that I have, you know, that I have, not because I have no, I have self-worth issues, but because I'm trying to put us back on equal footing here, that we could all have this weird conversation, because I'm a jackass and I'm a complete utter moron at times. And yes, I will screw up and this sort of thing. If I quickly do this and make that humor apparent, it's like, oh, okay, he's one of us. We're all together here. Awesome. We've accomplished a goal.
That's a big thing in my chat. When somebody follows, the first thing I say is, welcome to the think tank, where if I can't figure it out, you guys will. And if we can't figure it out together, it's probably not a very good game. Because the idea is, especially lately, I've hit a couple of games where I'll get into a position, I'll just be like, fuck, I don't know what to fucking do. But I've got chat there, and they've got a different viewpoint. They maybe have played the game before, and they can give me hints and guidance to get me to where I want to go. Kind of the same thing as platforming. I can't figure this out. I don't know what to do. How the hell am I supposed to take a fucking pulley and shove it inside a fucking chicken to make a zip line roller? Like, how the fuck is that supposed to work?
So that's why you get the giant, you have to first have the giant Q-tip and then combine that with the other thing. And
or you give the wrench to a monkey to make a monkey wrench to open this up. Yeah, it's whatever.
That's LucasArts for you.
Yeah.
No,
it's
LucasArts.
The same thing. You know, it's the, I'm pulling myself down. We're meeting on the same level because I don't know everything. Like, I wouldn't be playing these games blind if I knew what the fuck I was doing. You know, I mean, there's some shit, especially in adventure games, where it just doesn't make any sense. You know, you have to get the inflatable rubber ducky tube from outside your window, and the Band-Aid, and the clamp. You know, if you've ever played Longest Journey, it's considered one of the most obtuse puzzle solving, you know, what's that? Rube Goldberg designs ever. And that one, I figured it out right away. I knew what I was going into. I knew what I had to do. I could kind of see it. But there are other things that, like, it doesn't click. I'm either not in the thought process of the game. I'm not thinking like the devs are thinking. I can't figure it out. And that's why chat is so helpful. And that pulls them up to that level of, we're solving this together. We're figuring it out at the same time. I'm going to try to figure it out first, but I'm going to inevitably get stuck. And that's where everybody else comes into it, is because I am in the game. I'm nose deep in it. I'm playing it. I might miss some stuff. I might not see some stuff. I might not remember a clue. But chat will. So they're going to be able to come in and help me out. And then we're kind of like, we're solving it together. And that's where point and click adventure games and puzzle games kind of have an advantage, no offense, over like platformers and stuff, because they can help me with my issues. They can't help somebody who's platforming, playing Bashi or whatever, can't help them get past their,
well, because we're comparing the two, and you know, if a platformer and either FPS or any of those kind of games are games of skill, mm-hmm. you know, whether, you know, yes, you could argue the idea of packet loss and hitboxes and all uh-huh. that to the day's end. If you want to have really fun, check out Netcode and learn how to code that, and then you'll understand the pain. But when it comes to point and click adventure games and a lot of these other ones, text adventures or puzzle games, any of those sort of things, they're tests of wit, you know, they're tests of your intellect. And mm-hmm. and a lot of that can be translated. The idea of like how you think things, how you approach a situation, especially puzzles and point and clicks. And you mentioned a lot of the old LucasArts ones where they're just bizarrely, well, they're obtuse, so they're trying to be humorous or trying to be funny, because there's a lot of those weird things in puzzle games where it's like, well, what does this item do? What I can combine, you know, and then you have the idea of, well, I can combine items. What if I combine this and this? What happens with this? And then it's become sort of a experimentation. And they've kind of gotten away from that as the years have gone on. Just because it's so, I mean, like, you have the ability of combining things that just adds another layer of complexity sometimes that I don't even think really needs to happen in a lot of these point and click adventure games.
Well, there's this, it's video game logic. You know, you have to, in order to figure out, like, especially in point and clicks, in order to figure out the solution to some puzzles, you have to think like the devs are thinking, and you have to, again, think in the context of the devs. Nowadays, I mean, I know a lot of people that if I said, oh, just grab a monkey wrench, they'd be like, what the fuck is that? You know, they don't know what a monkey wrench is.
Yeah.
There are some that are ridiculously obtuse, like the inner tube and the whatever. But after some point, adventure games have evolved over time to be less about can you make the connection and more about how intuitive is this? Can you figure it out with the context that you have? And if you've fed into the context enough, you've read into the context enough, you can figure it out. You know, I mean, that's the sign of a good adventure game, a good point and click adventure game or a puzzle game, is when you are able to read the context well enough to be able to say, okay, I'm on the same wavelength. I can figure this out. And yes, some of it is intellect. I mean, if you've got anybody, this is something you may not know about me, but I'm half deaf. I'm missing hearing in both ears. So whenever, and I also can't carry a tune in a bucket. So despite playing violin for 3 years, you know, whatever.
Hey, look, Beethoven was completely deaf, although he wasn't born deaf. He eventually became completely deaf. And
yeah,
and
so what's my excuse?
Well, I mean, I'm saying, like, he started composing things in his mind and he was insane. Mm-hmm. Or was it Mozart? Was it Beethoven? I think it was Beethoven.
I can't remember.
But Beethoven.
Like I said, I don't know music.
Beethoven or Mozart, one of those two was deaf and one of those composed, you know, they're amazing symphonies in their heads, mm-hmm. to the point where there were stories that they would be conducting and the stuff would be over and they'd still be conducting because they still had more to do and it's amazing and that kind of stuff. Anyway, yeah, and people are talking about that in CSI that Grissom was half deaf as well, in terms of CSI Las Vegas. And it was Beethoven. Thank you, Handy McKay, in the chat room for correcting me whether it's Beethoven or Mozart. I always forget who was deaf, but that's the point. Being is that, you know, all this stuff is there, and things like that. So it's. That's where I think I enjoy streaming a lot. And we're actually at the hour mark, so we're almost out of time for the official show.
Sorry.
It's okay. No. We've accomplished the goal, remember?
Oh, yeah, right. We made the quota.
Because that's sort of the idea. I think that's the appeal of streaming, is that you can have this kind of collective experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's exactly where, you know, where, why it is people that stream do it. And I've started getting it a lot of times. For me, certain games are more of a solo experience. It's like the last vestige I have that I don't have to be this on-air personality, and I can kind of just either relax or kick back, or more importantly, if I want to say something weird or listen to a weird podcast or start blaring Iced Tea because, you know, it's time.
Why
to hear,
not?
It's, you know, time to hear West Side Connection again, because, you know, there are times where I've literally played and this is silly and ridiculous, but I played Pokemon, specifically, I think it's Moon I'm playing right now. And for some reason, I've gotten the mindset of every time I fight a Team Skull, I've got to put like some weird hip hop song in the background because it seems weirdly appropriate, like some 90s pop, like hip hop. And so I'll be busting out Still or any of the like music off of the Office Space soundtrack or West Side Connection or Tupac or even, you know, Notorious B.I.G. and just sort of jam that as I'm destroying, you know, Team Skull, because that's what I do as a weird person. But that might not be appropriate for a stream, you know, to be blaring music.
Like you said, it's a community experience and things like that. And because I don't differentiate tone. If I hit a music puzzle or a sound puzzle that doesn't have a visual element to it, it takes me a lot longer to figure it out. If I find sheet music in a game, I immediately just start internally crying because I can't read sheet music. It takes a lot, you know, it takes a lot of extra effort that I otherwise wouldn't have to put in, which, again, effort, not a bad thing, but I just, it's not where I go with. It's not what I work on. But the collaborative effort, I think, is very important, and not only just in games, but especially in the creative realm. Now, when it comes to creative, I do visual arts, I do digital art, I do perlers, things like that. Just something to keep my mind, you know, creative, just to keep the gears going. But the really important part was writing on stream, writing in the creative, because I might not. Okay, so let me back up a little bit. One of the things I studied in grad school was collaborative pedagogy. Now, what that means is a group of people teaching each other how to write and constantly improving, because you have other people who have a different viewpoint, who are able to look at what you're creating. And it works. It's the same as any kind of creative endeavor, music, video, creating a video game, creating a piece of art, things like that. Art, I would say, is a bit more personal because it's coming out of your head and you can't get it wrong.
This is why a lot of games have like teams and sometimes right. even when you have a solo, even when you have like a very small indie studio, you at least have a second person sometimes. Sometimes you don't, but you know, that's
well,
when you start
QA.
Right,
it's
exactly.
QA testing. Exactly. So
the idea of like with writing, like mm-hmm. there are times and any creative endeavor that you just want to bounce something off somebody and say like,
exactly.
does this work? Like I always remember with a recent movie, Zootopia, that they just they didn't figure out what Zootopia was until like a year before it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to scrap everything. They almost scrapped everything because they originally taught from one of the characters' point of view. I think it was the Fox character, Wild, and then they sort of converted to talk from Judy Hopps, the bunny character, point mm-hmm. of view. And they didn't get to then until they screened their movie for Pixar, the other yep. animation team at Disney. And they could see that wasn't working. It's like, but there's something here with this Judy Hopps character. And they're like, that's it. Thank you.
Right.
So,
the big thing that, that I've run into with is, I have everything in my story. I have it up here, but I might have context up here that never gets onto the page. So it makes complete sense to me. But as soon as I offer to someone else or somebody else is reading it, they're like, well, this doesn't make sense. How did you go from A to B or A to C? Where's B? And I'm over here like, oh yeah, B is this. And they're like, well, where's that in the story? Or where's that in this game? Where's that in whatever? I'm developing. I'm actually working on a personal project right now to boost my resume, creating my own point and click adventure game. And the very first thing I did was I built the layout of what I was trying to create and I sent it to somebody else. And they said, well, what about this? You know, if you're creating this kind of environment, well, where do they sleep? Where do they piss? Where yeah. do they wash? Where do they, you know? And one of the big things, I had completely forgotten about a med bay, a medical area, you know, where somebody's injured. Where do they go? Oh, shit. So I had to go back and completely redraft it
yep.
because somebody else is going to see something in my work that I didn't see before. And that's kind of going full circle. That's the same thing with streaming. I'm very much a fuck it, let's do it live kind of person. There have been a couple of times where OBS has crashed. I've lost all my scenes. But instead of delaying my stream, the first half of it will be like, hey, guys, I'm recreating my layout. Hey, let's import this picture, resize it. Oh, let's put in the webcam. Hey, now you can see me, you know, blah, blah. And I'll do it live because why not? I mean, share it. Share that experience with everybody, sure. you know. And I know a lot of people who won't do that. They will not go live unless they've got everything set up perfectly. But in my opinion, I mean, that casual interaction is part of, you know, who I am. So why not just, you know, fuck it, do it live.
For me, when they introduced studio mode, that was like my biggest, like, I can preview a scene before I cut to it. That's amazing. And I was so excited for that. Like, that was like the moment of like, finally, OBS is where I want it to be, where I can plan things and tactically do this and go boof.
You're going to have to show me how to do that because I haven't figured it out yet.
we'll talk off air or something because, yeah, like that's been sort of my thing is I understand that. And a lot of games, like you talk about sort of where people piss and sleep, a lot of the games that I think people remember, whether they love it or not, and you can tell that it's the master crafter at work, is when they've got their world building down pat. Yep. Like, I can't name the amount of wiki articles I read, and it happens every time I play the game, no matter what, I will go down this weird wiki rabbit hole of Fallout. Whether yep. I'm playing New Vegas, whether I'm playing 4 yep. or even 3, I will go immediately to like the wiki and just get lost in articles about things like, oh, because like one of the things in, like, I always found like fascinating about the game, first off, that it's the post-apocalyptic world 1950s future. I always love that concept.
Mm-hmm.
But that the idea that why they have bottle caps as currency is because they've lost the tech to make bottle caps. And since those are yep. kind of unique and can't be counterfeited easily, this is why that they can do this sort of thing. And you go down that rabbit hole of stuff and, you know, that happened to me. Or I recently played, I'm not sure if you had a chance to use it, the new Sea and World game, Abduction. I kickstarted into it.
I'm a huge Myst person.
Yes.
I actually played Myst and Riven with my mother.
Nice.
And she has very bad motion sickness, so she would have to take Bonine and Dramamine before we could actually play it. Five Subject Notebooks. filled with yep. notes and everything like yep. that. And I did not get into Abduction because I couldn't afford it.
No, that's fair. I kicked into it because I'm like, it's another Sea and Worlds game. When it came out, and I had it for, you know, the PC and the Mac, and I put it on, I'm like, oh, that's right. That's why Sea and Worlds that's why they're the masters of this stuff, because you immediately get in and the world, it feels real. And mm-hmm. and it has all this sort of texture and weird details and small little things you interact with, things you don't interact with. Things are just part of this world building. You go in there like, oh, that's right. This is a real place. I forgot. Yep. This is what happens when you play a game that is just built by world builders and they know exactly what they're doing.
And it's interesting that you mentioned Fallout, because there's a couple videos floating around right now regarding the term shandification. Now, shandification is referring to an old novel written back in the 1900s called Tristram Shandy. And the reason why it refers back to that is it's the idea of creating a world so complete in detail. You know what they eat, you know where they piss, you know where they sleep, you know where they, how they make clothes, all this stuff. It's a world, and it's pretty much video games to a T. A well-made, shandified video game will be able, you'll be able to find all this. And the point is you flesh this world out so much that somebody else can create their own narrative within it. Tristram Shandy was the literary backing for this, because this guy created a world so complete that you could take this novel and write your own story running through it. So, I mean, there's a couple videos floating around. I don't know where they are. But I'm sure you can Google them
for sure. I never thought of it that way. Cause like a lot of times that's sort of what I always take, like another game, like you talk about notes and stuff. I remember playing Fez when it came yep. out, that I needed when it came to the point of like I knew the game was already going to be a thing when I went into a room and saw a QR code in there. I'm like, that's going to be,
get your phone out.
Yep. All right, people. Well, we've hit the hour mark. I think we've talked as much as we can. Gelf, a complete and utter pleasure having you on the show. Let's say people actually who are not watching this live, who are not on Twitch, they want to actually watch you play all these weird, crazy point and click adventure games and do their thing. How can they find you?
Okay, well, I'm on Twitch, twitch.tv/6footgelfling, all spelled out. I'm also on Twitter under the same name, SIXFOOTGELFLING. If you guys are familiar with Dark Crystal at all, it's the same exact spelling. That's where it comes from. Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. I'm on Steam. I'm on Discord. I'm pretty much available everywhere, but yeah.
That's okay. Totally fine. Well, of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404. There are the chat rooms, the Twitters, and everything else. If you want to catch previous episodes of this podcast, you can head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links to show notes, the Twitter account for the show, which is at 8bitlife podcast. And of course, if you want to catch this live, we are live typically Wednesdays at 7 p.m. on twitch.tv/cosmicradio.tv. And of course, after you've done all your subs and you know, contribute monies to the Gelf here, and you have, look in your pocket, you say, I got $1.15 left in change, let me first go buy that packet of Twizzlers and then come back and then give money, you go to patreon.com/8bitlife. So that's it for the day. See you next time. Talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
Ta-da.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.